Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Australia's hottest golfing podcast is Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen.
I thought I'll go and hit some balls. Go down to the range. Guess who's on the range?
Yeah, of course he is.
It's Tiger hitting balls.
I drive the golf cart up behind him. He doesn't see me. Yeah. And just plonk the cart there, start hitting balls. He turns around and looks at me and goes, he said, what the f*** are you doing here?
Talk Birdie to Me. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To the sweet sounds of Kevin Bloody Wilson, it's Hump Day with Swanee and friends. Samantha's still away. We're just waiting for something.
Had the baby yet?
I don't know. Nothing on Instagram.
I was going to say, we know 3 minutes after she had it, it'll be posted somewhere.
So it's Dane's one, and it's our good mate, Dr. Peter Larkins, is the third. Hello, Pete.
Morning, Ralph. Pete, Dane, nice to see you. What a joy to be catching up.
Oh, absolutely. Man, it's a pleasure.
Great way to start the day.
And, of course, if this was a radio show, I'd have to go through all your intro and background and all that. But, you know, podcasts, we just say your name. We just get straight into it. But
yeah, name says it all. Man who doesn't need an introduction. 100%. Remember that one, Ralphie?
Exactly. 100%. Actually, so I first met you at Triple M days when... Let's face it, it was about you and me as reporter and doctor. There was a couple of hangers on, like Eddie McGuire. And
yeah, we set the scene, though, the standard.
That's right.
Initial awards we got. Yeah.
But it was back then when you first did it. So the Triple M's first year of doing footy was 97. And back then, it was just someone on a microphone sometimes talking about what they might have seen coming off the ground, including bozos like me. But one of the things that you and Ed, with Ed's backing, was to bring some general medical expertise to the listener, saying this is actually what's happened.
Yeah, I get often asked, how did you start in the game? And of course, Dipper was my inspiration on the boundary,
of course.
You know, I wanted to emulate Dipper because he was the go-to guy on the boundary, getting it right every time. Of course,
you taking the piss there?
slightly swanning I was, but Dipper was for Channel 7, I was Triple M, and there was only two of us those days because no one else wanted to. We sort of introduced all that, but it was 97, so I'd just come off first seven seasons working with Adelaide Crows in Melbourne as their Victorian doctor. So I'd been on the bench, you know, with the Adelaide Crows. And
what does that entail? Obviously, they can't fly their own doctor over. Well, you just get there.
No, but they wanted someone really good in Victoria. So. The short story behind that is that Brian Sando, who was the initial doctor when Crows got their AFL license in 1990, I'd worked with him at Olympic stuff. So he was one of the Olympic doctors, but he was also a Sandful doctor over there. So he got appointed to look after the AFL Adelaide side when they came in, but he wanted someone in who knew the Victorian scene, because sometimes players need to be left behind with a broken rib, or in those days they did have a head injury even though they didn't recognise them, right? They sometimes didn't fly back that night, so he wanted someone who knew the Victorian scene. He knew I'd been working with Geelong, because I did six seasons with Geelong, but was just helping out with him. So he just rang me and said, you know, do we need someone in Victoria? So they were here every second week when they first came in, and it saved them money. Yeah, the Crows didn't have any money, of course.
Is that something still happens, or are they...
Yes, it is. Yeah. So if often I look at the bench now and I see, when GWS might be playing in Melbourne or Brisbane playing in Melbourne, I see their doctor from their local doctor, and I see a mate of mine who's sitting there helping out beside them. So there's always two doctors on the bench in case one's got to go downstairs. But back to Ralphie's question. Yeah, so I remember I got the call from Ed, and he said, have you signed with the Crows yet? And I said, no. And he said, don't sign. He said, we've got a license, we're going to call the footy. And I thought we were going to call the footy, so I thought, I really stepped up. I've gone from being a little, a doctor.
You wouldn't have said no, though.
No, but he was...
Hard me to say no to
it. No, well, I thought the opportunity. But he was putting together a hand-picked team. You know, he had Quarters. He wanted to bring Quarters in. He wanted to bring Dermot in. He wanted to bring Jason Dunstall in. Sam.
BT.
BT, you and me. And so, that you know, and again, the very first game we did, and Ed tells us, in fact, he told the story last week at Epworth when we were doing a little bit of a fundraiser for the hospital, and he was interviewing how... So Wayne Carey was one of the guys at the time. He was part of the, you know, Ricky Nixon's big group. First game at Waverley, dislocated his shoulder. Club 10, dislocated his shoulder 8 minutes into the first game, first quarter. And I'm sitting there on the bench. You know, I'm sort of, oh, there's no script for this, right? You know, you just go when you're turning. I might be talking about an ankle or a hammy. Next minute, one of the biggest players in the whole of the AFL is coming to the ground, shoulders hanging out like this. All the guys upstairs stop talking, throw down to me, and I think it's pretty quiet. Oh, I better start talking. And so I knew exactly what he'd done, because when you've worked in footy, you know what a dislocated shot. But they couldn't get it back in, so I'm leaning over the fence. Harry Unglick's the North Melbourne doctor, famous Harry Unglick. I'm holding on to Wayne Carey, holding him against the fence. Harry's trying to put his thing back in, and I'm describing it. Ed thought it was the best decision he'd ever made in his life to have me come and work on the boundary, because he said, here is the first game I've ever done, and we've got the biggest... And, you know, and then I had to commit to how long he was going to miss. You know, it is to say, well, you know, what is this injury? What are they going to do? How long is he going to be out for? Like, it happened a minute ago, and he's already putting pressure on me. But I went the three-month call just like that. Yeah. It turned out he missed, you know, 16 weeks. And here I thought, and as soon as I said it, I thought, what have I done? I've just put one of the best players in the league out for 3 months. They might be playing next week, because clubs like to sort of get people back. But that was the start. That was our first Triple M game, and it just went on from there.
So where is the line both that you had to straddle back then and what you see now and what we often talk about, and is client patient confidentiality and the what nod and a wink saying, well, we're not talking about cancer, we're talking about hamstrings and shoulders. And
no, but it's a fair question too, and you know, and medical confidentiality becomes a great thing, but these weren't my patients, right? So I'm just a bloke in the crowd seeing things happen. But the point was, I'd been around footy clubs since I was 6 years of age. My uncle was the second head trainer at Geelong for 15 years. At 6 years of age, I was strapping ankles and smelling the liniment in the club room. So I knew footy, and I'd worked 6 years on the bench at Geelong, 7 years on the bench at the Crows. So when something happened during a match, as long as I could see the vision of it, I knew exactly what the doctors were going to do. And in those days, they didn't sneak downstairs straight away from the cameras, because there wasn't the focus on the media when we started in the 90s, right? And so the players would often be getting assessed on the bench, whether it was their ankle. And so I could just read and I could make a comment. I didn't have to speak to the doctors. Very occasionally, the doctors would look up and go like this at me, like, oh, they're worried about this guy, you know. So there wasn't much exchange of information at all, because, you know, I just visually was judging it. If I could see it, I knew an AC joint from a dislocated shoulder from a stinger. You know, there was, you remember the word, we introduced the word stinger to the game, didn't we? Back
I thought it was Stephen Tingay.
So there was a period of time, you know, when and the coaches used to get really annoyed, because I think the doctors were giving me inside information. The only thing was, you know, we used to do the footy show on a Sunday morning. I would sometimes, and then there'd be a game in Fremantle or a game in Sydney, and so I'd have to ring and check, is we're going to cover the injuries of the day, as we did on the footy show on Channel 9.
Yep.
I would often, and the club doctors were my mates, of course, because I'd work with them. We've got our own little club, the AFL Doctors Club. So I just ring them to clarify. Look, I'm going to say Ralphie's broken his collarbone, because, look, you know, and he goes, oh, yeah, well, you might be right if you say that.
Yeah.
So they would never actually get away, but most of the time it was just what I saw.
Which is very similar to what journos would do with coppers, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you've got a relationship, they're not going to think, would I look stupid if I said that?
Well, that's what I used to say. I said, I don't want to make a deer head of myself. Yeah. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to say that, you know, that looked like a syndesmosis in the days when we doctors knew what a syndesmosis was, and you know what one is, right?
Yeah. It's life-threatening. Did you know that?
Yeah, no, I did. Well, I often talk about some of the most spectacular injuries I've seen in footy, and this one comes to mind. Right. You know, the second most famous ankle injury I ever saw, I reckon, foot and ankle. But just back to the...
Hang on, you can't say second and not say the most.
Okay, Jason Snell. A lot of people, if you know Snelly, I mean, we talk about injuries that have been, you know, life-altering, you know, and you talk about Tommy Lonergan losing a kidney, because I always talk about one of the most spectacular injuries we've seen, but, you know, in terms of significant injuries, Jason Snell, broken, dislocated ankle at the MCG. It was a super one. Yours was pretty... People didn't appreciate how bad, but I'm not here to talk about you, I was at that game and I saw it and I knew you were in trouble. But back to you know, the confidential side of things, because people used to think somehow I'd be sneaking in and, you know, getting players' records, and I never crossed the line. I can sit here honestly and say all the time, and, you know, I worked at Victoria House where the players used to have their scans done. Obviously, I know a lot of the surgeons. I never crossed the line to get information and then used it that I the information that I'd received through my medical contacts. It was simply what I knew or what the club was allowed to give out.
Were all the players receptive and stuff like that? Did you ever get told to get fucked or like abuse you for like trying to sneak over the boundary
and go, no. I got told. Can I use that word you just used?
No, you can say whatever you like on this.
Yeah, I got told, mate, to get freaked by the footy managers and quite a bit. And a few coaches tackled me, including Bucks once. And there's a really, it was over. I can't remember which cracker it was now. Jimmy,
Andrew from North.
When he came back and he had the knee reco and he had an allograft, which is taken from another person's body and tissue, putting well. I won't go on with it because in our First Nations world, you know, the concept of a person who's deceased or passed on is very well respected, as you call it. And I had no appreciation of that. So I got absolutely barreled by Jeff Walsh and even Bucks. Because apparently Cracker's family wasn't aware of the type of surgery he'd had. And I was just describing how he'd come back playing so quickly after a knee reco, right?
Yep.
So the trouble I got into was not so much the players, because as you would know, Dane, part of the fun of that job wasn't just being on the boundary talking about an ankle or a hamstring. It was getting in the rooms, and afterwards you'd interview the best player or before it was a coach. So you got the thrill of being in the rooms and being part of the spirit of the game. The hard part was the losing rooms, because at Triple M we always used to do the winning room. That was easy because everyone wanted to talk if you won, and then you had to go across to the losing rooms and it'd either be the skipper or somebody would be put up to talk, and that was the hard part of the job.
Unless you're the best player in the world.
Best player on the losing side.
I did my best.
Yeah,
exactly. I could.
Yeah, so the part of the job that I really liked was just, you know, being basically in the change rooms as well, and you got to know the coaches, the players, you know, certainly the footy managers and the people behind the scenes. So very rarely got into trouble.
I better throw the gear stick in the reverse there. A spray from Jeff Walsh, Dane. Describe.
Yeah, no, he could be a very frightful man, Jeff.
But he's
Walsh,
one of your favourites of all time.
Do like Jeff, see if he can come on here one day. But yeah, he was a very fearful man. But you knew where he stood with Jeff, which was good. But he hit you right between the eyes. We used to say he'd get the shotgun out. If he was walking around with a shotgun, someone was in big trouble.
He's got a huge experience, of course, across the clubs that he's been at with North and Collingwood. But, you know, I was so innocent in what I was saying, because BT put me under pressure. Because Cracker came back, and I think he was playing like 8 weeks after a knee ACL, and suddenly BT is saying to me, well, you know, what's happened to the medical world? What's this new revolution that, you know, you're back after 8 weeks? And I knew he was playing. I saw that he was selected, and I spoke to the particular surgeon because, you know, with my contacts, I tried to bring a bit of colour to some of the stuff we did pre-game. So I wanted the surgeon to come on to talk about the technique that had been used, because a lot of people didn't understand why you could get back so soon if you used a bit of tissue to create a new ACL ligament without having to take tissue from your own body. And he said, no, like, you understand that, Pete, you just do it. You know, I don't want to come. I don't want to get any publicity.
He knew what was happening. He threw
Well, it was Julian Feller, right? And I was trying to give Julian a bit of a leg up, right? Come give me a bit of... So he said, no, you do it. So I got permission from Julian to do it. So when I got on and I explained it, BT just ran with it and ran with it. And because I was explaining it's a cadaver. A cadaver, of course, is a body that's taken from the morgue. And BT says, hang on, Doc. So... A dead person's tissues now run around on the MCG tonight. And I'm thinking, I don't want to go on with this. Yeah. And I said, yeah, well, that's what a cadaver is, BT. Look it up in the dictionary. A cadaver is it. But what I hadn't appreciated, Dane, and I spoke to Crack about it, and I spoke to Walshy and Bucks about it. I said, I was just explaining what I was asked to explain. I hadn't appreciated in the Aboriginal and First Nations culture that, you know, that was something that's quite... Yeah. And he knew what he'd had. I mean, it's not the player had known, but apparently some of the elders... Okay. Yeah. So Walshy just... mind, he played all right that day, you know, so it's not like I put him off. And he didn't know I'd said it before the game. But, you know, Walshy and I made up over time.
So why don't they do that now, if you can get back in 8 weeks?
Well, you can. But they don't last. So, by the very definition, they've got no blood supply. Remember the Lars became a popular synthetic ligament as well. So they are still done.
Like if you're 33 and probably had would you recommend that?
The answer is they are still done. Yeah, okay. They just don't get the publicity that a hamstring or a quadriceps graft gets. And they're done a lot in America.
Yeah.
The reason they're not done as much here is there's a different process in the way they're preserved and sterilised. They get basically nuked. In Australia, because of all the safety guidelines, you don't want to pick up an infection if somebody's had something. You know, so, and it really damages the tissue quite a lot. So our guidelines in Australia about using someone else's tissue to put them in, but it is still done, and the method of preserving it and preparing it's changing a bit now. So it is being done a bit more. But eventually they fail because basically it's dead tissue. So it really just is a strut that you put in to hold things
together. I'd say it's like Scott Penderbury or Touchwood or Steel Sawbottom. He's only got one or, you know,
be the discussion with the player and say, look, we can get you back. You know, you won't need the 12 months off. Yeah. But you know, like Lydia Lucilla, if you look at the aerial skiers, you know, we've had Kirsty Marshall, we've had Lydia Lucilla, Jackie Cooper, Lisa Camplin, who you would know from Clint. So they all had ACLs and a couple of them had this done just to get through to win gold medals.
You're going to open a lot of doors here and I'm going to walk through them, right? So you've just opened a door before.
Listen, I'm a big boy, mate. Go for it. Do your best.
Tell me, would this be right or wrong? Going back to BT. So I'm going to use the reverse gear a bit. Would he be one of... Now your background as an Olympian and as a medical... well-respected medical person, as you say, you know your stuff, you lean over the fence, you see something. But when it comes to working in the media, you were a bit new when Ed gave you your job, as in full-time job.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely.
Did you underestimate the people that I call gun loaders, Dane? And someone like BT is a gun loader. So you say that, and he was more than happy to make you...
He'd bury me when he could. Yeah. That's what you're trying to say, Rob. I did, look...
And I'll say some of the best of it, James Brayshaw, gunloader, Gary White, gunloader. They get other people.
Yeah, I hadn't appreciated that, I was a well-respected doctor. I was looked up to, but I didn't expect to get absolutely barreled by those people and set up the way I did, right? Because I took it pretty seriously. But Triple M, as you well know, was not the most reverent of places to work, you know, and I picked up on it pretty quickly. And I'd done part-time media work with the AMA and I'd help a lot of journalists explain what an ACL was or, you know, what a dislocated shoulder was. So I had a good relationship with the journalists anyway, and that's how he'd picked up on it. But, you know, I got in there and, you know, we've seen, you know, BT flourish in his style, but he didn't mind having a crack.
We'll say this now. Obviously, all the links will be there. The reason you are coming in is that you've got to book the Healthy 100, 100 Ways to a Healthier, Happier and Longer Life. So obviously, we'll talk about your footy journey and your media journey, but that's the reason you've come in about your book. And can I to use a Billy Brownless word, succinct it in saying, this is just your opportunity to just do basics well and enjoy your life more and live longer.
Yeah, well, Billy would love to succinct it or concise it. I'll concise it the way Billy likes to concise it. I've come from a background of high performance in sport in one way, Ralphie. So when you're talking about all the things an athlete needs to do, they need to eat well, they need to rest up, they need to get their little niggles sorted out, look after their health, importance of sleep. And, you know, over the course of time, as I've looked after patients in my practice, they're all aging and they also want to perform well as they get older.
Yep.
So I was sort of trying to draw a link between high performance in sport and high performance in life. Just what, you want to be on your game today. You want to, you know, whatever you do in the workplace, you want to perform well. And if you're not well, you don't perform well. So it was really a collection of my thoughts of how to look after yourself and not just accept that aging's inevitable. Yes, it's inevitable in terms of the clock ticking. We're all going to have a birthday this year and a birthday next year. We understand that. But some people age better than others. And I was looking at why do some people age better than others? What are the secrets in those so-called blue zones of the world where people live a long time? So Japan, Sardinia in Italy, Ikaria in the Greek islands. There's regions of the world where people live to 100 and beyond, just consistently. And it's not just genetics, it's their lifestyle. And one of the great things about those areas was these people are active. They get up in the morning, they grow their own vegetables, they go to the garden, pick the food they're going to eat that day, and they have an incredible social connectivity. So I get a bit philosophical in the book. There's the obvious things, you know, nutrition and exercise in the book. That's the front part of the book.
They take advantage of the benefits of drinking wine and enjoy a healthy sex life. They're the first two.
Great book. No, chapter 94, The Benefits of Drinking Wine, is my mate's favourite chapter. And I can't be hypocritical. I mean, I love a bit of, going out. And as I said, everything in moderation, including moderation, I say it in the book. But it's a collection of things that you need to line up just to
look. Is there a chapter about Vegas?
There's a chapter about holidays.
That's moderation.
Well, look, it's a bit of fun. So the book was sort of born out of, I wanted to, a challenge of writing something that, my kids would read and, something that wasn't just purely a medical book. I said, had a lot of patients who are asking me, they want to play their golf at 60, they want to go to the Bahamas, they want to go to the Super Bowl, they want to be on their boats. So, my elite athletes start at age 50 and go to about age 90 now, Swanee, you come to my rooms. And so I'm looking after people and looking at their knees, but I'm also looking at them staying healthy. And the other thing is every time you pick up a Sunday magazine this weekend, you go to the the lifestyle section, there'll be an article on sugar or an article on salt or an article on diabetes or an article on whether you should drink water or how much coffee you should drink. And I used to read all these and I thought they were pretty shallow, some of those articles. And yep. I thought, yeah, I know a little bit about that stuff from my background in nutrition. And so in the book, I also cover, you know, all the things that I thought people need to know about, you know, should I drink coffee or not? Is caffeine good or bad for you? How much salt am I allowed to have? Do I really need to drink 8 glasses of water? You know, is wine really bad for me? So chapter 94 was about, and there's a bit on the history of how wine, so my favourite story is about the Persian princess. So just a very quick side story about how wine was invented, because I had to read about wine, right? And so the story was that, you know, in the days before we had cold storage or refrigerators, I'm talking about, you know, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, they used to preserve vegetables or fruit by fermenting them in vinegar, right? And so you'd leave them ferment for a period of time and they'd be preserved a bit longer. And including, you could do that with grapes. And what happened, there was this particular king of Persia, he had a harem of girls and he had all these ones going. One of them fell out of favour and she got really depressed, so she decided she'd knock herself off. She, you know, went on and talked about bad things, but she said life wasn't worth living. So she went to the area where all these grapes had been preserved and started, she drank enough of this, you know, this rotting grape liquid that she'd probably die. But the more she drank, the happier she got. She got more intoxicated. She got pretty happy. The king really fell in love with her again, and she was introduced back into the harem of the king of Persia. So suddenly there was this decided that the fermented grape wasn't such a bad thing at all. So I tell him the story about, you know, that how, you know, that happened. I mean, the monks in Spain got involved. So there's a bit of a background about things like that. So it's not, it's a bit of fun in the book, you know. Why you should own a pet? Because people say to me, I'm going to take my dog for a walk. And I go, no, you're not. The dog's taking you for a walk.
Yes.
The best piece of exercise equipment you can invest in is not a treadmill or a spin bike. It's a dog, because it'll make you go to the house to, you know, to exercise. Yep. So there's things like that where
I've got my kids on the leash, so same kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. It's about it's about taking responsibility for your health and living, you know, aging youthfully. So it's not about whether you slow down aging, but in the front of the book I talk about why we age, you know, how we decay, what happens inside our body, what's the aging process on our cells. So it gets a little bit medical, and then how you look after yourself going forward, with the key pillars being exercise and nutrition.
So you touched on the word genetics, which Dane has generously previously said it actually is a rather important thing. You know, when people say, oh, the great comeback of Nick Natanui, I've got a feeling me and Dan here, I don't think we could train to be Nick Natanui. need some genetic help, don't you, along the way?
Yes. Yeah.
So where's that fine line?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of studies looking at it. And in fact, it was something I learned because I had to do a little bit of research. I didn't know at all to write the book. So we sort of say, oh, you know, genetics determine whether you're going to have heart disease or bowel cancer or prostate cancer. And the answer is, yes, it does. It's about 20 to 25%.
Right.
So nearly 80% of your health journey is your lifestyle choices.
You can control.
Absolutely. So this is about you controlling. This is about a control book.
Yep.
And so it's about smoking. It's about what you eat, whether you're overweight or not, whether you have your health checkups to find out if you've got prostate cancer, bowel cancer, once you get into your 40s and 50s. So the genetics,
hang on. Have you had the finger up to date yet, Dane?
Yeah, of course.
But have you had a prostate
check? No.
Oh, there you go. So the reason we talk
real
about...
Real highbrow comedy.
I know.
Real highbrow stuff.
Is this R-rated or what? I don't know. I have to go back and see the other ones. But I just want to... people say, oh, you know, the genetics, you know, my father had heart disease, my uncle had heart disease, so I'm going to get heart disease. No, you're not. You just know from your genetics you're prone to it. So you should be getting ahead of it. You get on the front foot, as I say. So genetics, you need to know your genetics for sure. So if there's a whole history of prostate cancer in every bloke in your family at 40, well, then you absolutely have your prostate checks early on, or if it's skin cancer, or in the women it's the breast cancer, right?
Yep.
So not to belittle the fact that genetics are important. So you need to know your family background, but 80% of what happens to our health is because we don't look after ourselves.
I just turned 40, so what would you... I've had the prostate check, but that was late at night, so what would you recommend as a 40-year-old, what should I go?
That's sort of almost the magic number, 40. They say, when do I need to start having my heart checkups or my, you know, colonoscopy? Yeah. The camera crew arrives and you have a look at the whole, you know, the pipes up the back, as we say. You know, so 40 is sort of about the time. And again, it depends a little bit on your background. So if you had a background where your uncles or your dad had prostate cancer or bowel cancer or, you know, skin cancers, you probably start in your 30s.
Yeah.
But 40 is not the bad age to start looking for blokes to have to start. And then, you know, if you had a clear reports on all the things. You probably only need to do it every 3 to 5 years. Yeah. It's not an annual thing. The older you get, the more frequently you have your health checks. Yeah.
But did you see him when he took his top off at the boxing? What an inspiration.
Yeah, I did.
40.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, there were some ones that shouldn't have taken their tops off at that, do you agree? No. And then there were others I looked and I go, yeah, look at Daisy got there. Did you see Daisy? Daisy was trying to... Daisy had
some padding when I punched him up.
Daisy was working really hard. I was watching Daisy and he was trying to get that abs.
You need some padding.
Yeah, but there were some... It's interesting because, you know, when you talk about someone who's come from an elite background like Dane's had, and we sort of see like go on two pathways after they retire, yes. Right? There's the Billy Brownless pathway, as I say to my patients, and there's other blokes who the Mickey Conlon pathway, and Bucks, who comes into Epworth a bit too.
He was down, we record this at Kooyong, he was downstairs a couple of weeks ago, and I just bumped into him and said, an hour on the treadmill. Yeah, I did actually. I thought I actually did that as a throwaway line. But
was a bloke called himself. Mickey Conlon, who you may know, who played at Fitzroy. Yeah. Look him up if he didn't play for Victoria Legend. He walks into my office. He could play tomorrow. Yeah. He is unbelievable. So he's good mates with
Tommy Hafey. He was one that.
Yeah, Hafey. You know, so there are guys that just continue the pattern because it's just part of their routine in life. Yeah. The other blokes who go down the other pathway. So in that boxing, it was interesting to see some of them were still. Keeping, you know.
So your categories here, exercise. So I've written some lines from your subset and tell me how close I am, right? So exercise. First, cardio versus weights. What's the equation there, particularly as you age?
Well, both are really important. And I'll come back to weights because I think they've gone up in importance in the last few years with a lot of studies. People think strength training, you're going to come up looking like Arnie Schwarzenegger, right? You need Mr. Universe. It's not. Strength training... It provides protection for diabetes, for heart disease, for mental health, and certain cancers. So it's not just about muscles. Clearly it's about muscles, but there are certain chemicals released when you're exercising. Cardio is the famous one, because everyone says, oh, you go for a walk, you go on a treadmill, you ride a bike, as long as your heart's working. And it does. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a runner or a bike rider or a swimmer. As long as your heart's working, it doesn't know the difference. So most of the studies on why exercise is healthy look at cardio or so-called aerobic exercise. So that's the key pillar. You know, if you're going to be looking after yourself for blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, mental health, then you've got to do some cardio. It's just walking the dog. But obviously, the more intense you do, the better you get. But strength training has risen up in importance. So 2 to 3 sessions a week of strength training, working on the larger muscle groups, has been shown to... Obviously, it improves muscle tone and balance and stability. So falls in older people are reduced.
Yeah.
So they're not falling over, breaking their hip or getting damaged in the street, getting off the tram. But bone density is improved, particularly in women, if they're doing some strength training in their 40s and 50s when their bone density is normally dropping down. But for us, strength training is not just about looking good when you get your top off before the bout. It's actually diabetes, heart disease, mental health and cancers. So there are chemicals released.
What age does... Because I had a chat with a mate, I'm in mid-50s, I used to play footy with, and we're similar age. And you go from that part between you exercise because... You feel like you should to exercise because you need.
Yeah.
And where's that line saying where your body starts, is it atrophy? Is that the word? That you start losing muscle mass if you don't?
Yeah. Well, at age 30, we're not as strong as we were at 20. At age 40, we're less strong than we were at 30. And every decade, you lose 10% of your strength just through natural decline. Now, you can interrupt the natural decline.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So by doing so muscles are alive at 80. You know, muscles, you know, you go to a nursing home today and you get people doing just simple sitting up out of a chair and sitting down again, sitting up, getting up out of the chair. They're going to build up their core just doing that, so they're not going to fall over in the shower tomorrow. So that's a good sort of concept. But certainly you've got to have a motivation. So when you're an athlete, you've got a motivation. You've got a championship coming up. You've got a game this weekend.
Have you heard of SWAT FC? So we're going to go off. So there's motivation. Have you heard of SWAT FC, what that is, Pete?
Swan FC. Is that footy club?
Yeah, it's mine.
Yeah. Where's he going with this?
Well, I don't know.
That's your motivation, isn't it?
Well, my motivation. Yeah, I play weekly around the country. Just
different clubs. So like Croft did.
Fab did. Yeah.
Okay, but my point was that you're motivating from a performance point of view. Your accountant. I knew where this was going. Yeah. All right.
I like to give back in my older days. I'm on the decline, so I just like to go out and help rural communities and raise a bit of money.
No, you're giving back. No, I understand.
It's magnificent.
I'm trying not to laugh, but I'm
feel free.
But my point about you need a reason to exercise. My point about Swanee's got a reason, or you know, an athlete who's training for Paris in July this year, they get up, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, 3 degrees and belting rain outside, they're gonna go up and train this morning. But when you're talking about exercise for health, that's your motivation. You say, I want to be around for my grandkids. I want to be around. I want to go to Super Bowl when I'm 90 years of age. I want to still be playing golf. You know, I want to be able to go to the Bahamas for a holiday. I don't want to be on a nursing home in a nappy on an oxygen cylinder. That's what I talk about in the book. Everyone's going to age. But you age youthfully or you age and decline. So your motivation to exercise is I'm investing in myself. And this is where I don't get it with all these corporate guys. Oh, I'm too busy to exercise. I'm running this multinational company. I'm on a plane to New York and then I'm going to be in London next week. And I'm saying, hang on to these guys. If you fall over, think of all the people that are depending on you, right?
Yes.
So you need to look after yourself, you know, because you're the one who should be putting some time aside. If you're too busy to exercise, you'll be plenty time when you're sitting in a coronary care attached to all the wires looking at your heart going.
Doesn't matter then, does it?
No, well, no. Yeah. The company's still going to be going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So an even balance is what you're saying, weight and cardio. Like in a perfect world, if you had all the time, what would you do?
Well, 2 to 3 days of strength work. Yeah. You don't have to do five. I mean, cardio you should be doing 4 to 5.
So, and what does cardio mean? Like belting yourself on like bucks for an hour, or is it just a 20-minute
walk?
Well,
it depends where you're coming from. So if your base is nothing, if someone listening to this says, I haven't done any exercise for 10 years, what are you talking about? I'm saying walk around the block for 10 minutes today and walk around the block for 10 minutes tomorrow and do that for a week. And then next week, walk around the block for 15 minutes. Okay. Yeah. What we're aiming for is 30 minutes of continuous movement 5 days a week. So you don't start off on 30 because you'll probably blow a hammy or blow up your Achilles, right? So if you haven't done it for a while. So the cardio is 150 minutes a week. Which can be 60 minutes on a Saturday, then you've only got 90 minutes, you've got to do the rest of the week. So that's the magic number that reduces the risk of all medical conditions by 40%. There's no drug in the world that I can give you that's going to reduce your risk of heart disease, blood pressure, cholesterol, anything by 40%. So 150 minutes, but even at 60 minutes a week, which is nothing, 60 minutes a week, not a day, of cardio exercise, I'm talking cardio still, reduces the all-cause risk of disease by 25%. Yeah. So I'm saying people go to their doctor today, they get a pill for blood pressure. They go to their doctor today, they get a pill for cholesterol. They get a pill because they can't sleep properly. They get a pill to control their blood sugar. They get a pill for their mental health. All of those, the blue pill, all those chemicals are produced when you exercise. Right, there are neurochemicals in the brain that are produced, things called dopamine. I talk about dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin. So people are going to their doctor, they want a shortcut, they want a passive pill. The best pill is to go out for a walk around the block. So that way you're investing in yourself. And so that's where that 150 minutes a week is the target number eventually. But you don't start off doing that the first week, you'll blow something.
I did not know that in my pocket, as in my iPhone, I'm a numbers guy, right?
Right.
So with racing and whatever, math science, which is called punning. I didn't know in your phone, it tracks your steps without even trying.
It does. If you've got an iPhone, it's got to help. Yeah.
I only found this out last spring, and I was going a bit silly on the weights dock, but not enough cardio, right? And then that's just, since I saw that.
Fantastic,
now,
Now
I've
So what's the number of steps you think you should be taking each day?
Well,
what's
the number? I hear that it's 10,000.
Correct. Yeah.
So I've gone from 10,000 to 13,800. Okay.
So that was a great marketing exercise. So the 10,000 is nothing, no science to it at all.
Yeah.
It was actually a step monitor, the meter that was brought out in Japan by a company, and they translated to the 10,000 meter step thing. 10,000 steps, it was 10,000 meters.
Yeah.
And so all the science is you have to be doing around about 7,500 steps to get health benefits. Now, if you do 10,000, you're going to get more.
Yep.
But this 10,000 was a marketing genius sort of figure. Yeah. And people say, an easy number to remember. But all the science about where does health come along, it's actually at about 7,500 steps. And in fact, in women who are over 50, it's even less. I don't want women to do less because I think the more you do, the fitter you get. But if you say, where's that barrier point where you start to get benefit, it's not 10,000, it's 7,500.
So I don't need to look up this phrase, but when you've done the whole thing on nutrition.
Yep.
I just look in the mirror. I don't need to look this phrase up. You can't out-train a shit diet. So that's me, right?
Yeah.
What's the importance of nutrition compared to training and everything else?
Well, I mean, I guess it's about fuel. It's about, you know, if you've got a Formula One car and you put lawnmower fuel in it, how's it going to perform? Yeah. So most athletes would understand that they need energy and they need repair fuel. So it's not just energy to expend, it's repair. So it's the proteins that you need for your muscle repair. And we live in a fast world with fast food and so-called convenience food, but most of the convenience food is going to be high in sugar and high in salt. All the processed foods, when you buy the pre-prepared foods, they've got various chemicals, preservatives, and that's not the way we grew up. My grandmother used to say, if I didn't pick it, grow it, or shoot it, it's processed, right? So that was my granny on the farm down Geelong way. So the issue there came down to we have got – incredible selection of foods available in Australia. We're not in a country where we haven't got access to healthy foods. And so the unprocessed foods, the natural foods, fruit, vegetables, lean protein, you don't have to eat meat, but you've got to get protein some way because that's repair. So nutrition is fuel. Nutrition is medicinal. And so what if we're full of sugar and we're full of carbohydrates and processed foods and high salt foods, that you're going to have more problems of obesity and blood pressure, and you just don't get the repair. So it's just the principle of, you know, why we eat. We eat to keep ourselves healthy.
All right, we're looking at the Healthy 100, 100 Ways to a Healthier, Happier and Longer Life with Dr. Peter Larkins. I want to ask you about four other sections in your book next.
Hey, it's the Ox here and my good mate Marco.
Yeah, I like the start. At the moment, you're listening to the Swanee and Friends podcast. Gee, he was a gun, all Australian, a fantastic magpie, sometimes a little bit heavy.
Can you imagine if he had been a Demons player in the blue and red, he would have been playing along Nathan Jones, they would have been having tat-offs, it would have been beautiful.
Yeah, he doesn't like cheese plates. Anyway, once you've finished listening to the Swanee and Friends podcast, we'd like you to hook over to the Couple of Blokes pod. The Ox and I chewing the fat, ripping the piss, and having some fun.
So just search Couple of Blokes wherever you listen to your podcasts. You won't be disappointed. I don't think you will be. Just give us a try.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
All right, Pete. Habits. This might be a bit of Dane, a bit of me, a bit of everyone. Where's the habits? What's the point of the habits?
Yeah, well, the first part of the book was easy to write, Ralphie, because it was, you know, why is exercise helpful? Why do we eat? I mean, most people, you know, they've heard that message for 30 years. But then what sort of habits do you need to introduce into your life to start to look after yourself? And that comes down to sort of personal behaviour things. That's what habits means, the healthy habits. And so the book started off was 100 ways to live to a healthy 100. So I've got to come up with 100 things. So the first 20 or 30 were easy, you know, eat well, have your health checkups, you know, by a dog. But habits were things that we need to do just to get right in our life. It's looking after our mindset, looking at personal development, and just going about things that where you've got a routine. So habits are routines. That's what habits means. It's something where you do consistently.
What if you've got three kids under three? How easy is that to stick to your disciplines?
Not much of a not
well. Great. You need a triple pram, mate.
You've got a skateboard on the back. Yeah,
triple pram. You need the backpack on as well. You know, yeah.
So you need to find ways to get out of the house on your own. You need to start working.
Yeah,
start
your TV show.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm appreciative of that fact that you know that our lifestyle, you know. It's about investing in yourself, though, and sometimes you need that mental space. Yeah. So one of the habits is I talk about being selfish. Selfish isn't a bad word. Looking after yourself So doing something for yourself.
You want to give my missus a call? And
yeah, well, I mean, I will because yeah, I'm happy to cover for you because, thanks, you know, the issue is that, you know, if you didn't look after yourself, then, you know, the three kids, your missus, you know, there's a problem. So it's a concept of saying I need some self-time. And the mums need it as well. Like three kids at home, the mums say, I need some space. I need to go off and have a Chardonnay with the girls and I'm going to walk to and from the bus. So they get the walk in, yes, but they also get the little Chardonnay in as well.
So Dave, just to go back a bit, what's your strike rate of mates ringing up and covering for you with Taylor over the journey?
Not great. Not great. They've tried. But
how many have been doctors?
Yeah, zero.
Well, this could be
your
chance.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Could be. Yeah.
Pete could be the man for you.
Did you struggle to get to 100?
No, I didn't. I had 150. I had 117.
117.
Yeah, so the publisher, Wiley Global, said to me, you've got to condense. So, for instance, when I talked about the value of walking.
What missed out? What poor number? You know, any. What missed out? What missed the cut? Like Mike Robbo's top 50. Who was unlucky?
Yeah, I'll have to go back, yeah, because it was a bit of a fight, you know, because I wanted to select them all, and they said, no, you can't. You know, so we blended a couple, because I had a chapter on why walking is healthy, and then I had a chapter on why the 10,000 steps was just an easy number, but it really wasn't, and we blended that in.
But it's an easy good number, though. That's the point.
Yeah, no, and I understand that, and I'm not saying don't aim for 10,000, but I'm saying if people say, oh, because, you know, I've got obsessive people, they get to 9,300, and at the end of the day, I say, oh, hang on, I haven't got my 10,000. They go out, and you know, and they'll walk around the block. You
it's
know.
Still not a bad thing, is it?
Yeah, that's they need 700 more steps, you know. Yeah. So I'm saying don't knock yourself out just because you're 700 short or you're 1500 short, you know. On that,
can you make it up? Can you do 10,700 the next day, or is it have to sort of? Can you do 5,000 one day? 15,000
so one of the habits is be consistent, you know. So so you can get an accumulative effect over the time. So you can bank a little bit of it. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, has that ever been your mindset where I didn't drink for 6 days?
I'm a binge drinker
on average.
Yeah, of course it is. So, when you get those doctors things like, how much do you drink? You're like. Fucking more than 10 or not? When you're doing more than 10, yes, absolutely more than 10. You know, they look at you like, you're a fucking animal.
What about your chapter on mindset? So, again, I'm just writing down a couple of things just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And I've got two sportsmen named. So, the first one, I'll say Craig McRae. And I say he has changed mindset in sport forever because until last year, we never saw players run out on the ground with a smile on their face, did we?
Yeah. Yeah, look, I remember him as a player because I've been around for that long, and you know, he was. I don't recognise him now from his playing days because he's just such a vibrant personality, so out there, so communicates so well. I'm really impressed from a distance because I only see him from a distance these days. But yeah, to see players laughing in the warm up, and I even watch the, you know, and some other clubs do it pretty well when they do the huddle just before the bounce.
Yeah,
but I watch I watch Darcy, you know, talk to the players, or sometimes it's another player, it might be Steele, you know, and there's just a joy about it, especially in 2023, of course. And of course, you know, it's easy when you've got that, you know, motivation. But yeah, look, Craig just seems, and he just brings quirky stuff, obviously, into training.
So what can other people take, as in us normal people, off positive mindset that we're watching Collingwood do?
For instance? Well, it's enjoy what you're doing. You know, it's the happiness. It's the in the mindset. I talk about DOSE, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. They're the chemicals that are produced. Whether it's from exercise, whether it's from laughter, whether it's from reading a good book or seeing a good movie, you get a rush.
Yes,
and from enjoying it, and that's a health rush as well. And it's a mindset of positivity. So that's you see that in sport because we know that, you know. I think it was Jack Dyer used to say that 90% of success in sport is half mental.
That is a Jack Dyer quote.
That's a Jack Dyer quote. I don't know if you've heard that, Tony, but I always sort of laugh because there's a few, you know, we won't start talking about the misquotes from Dougie Hawkins and from BT and even from Cornsey. You know, I remember Cornsey when he was the first coach of the Adelaide Crows and he used to say Andrew McLeod was the best player running around with balls below his knees. And he said that on air in one of the interviews we were doing before a game. But this, you know, so the point was about, you know, that mental approach to your life as well as mental approach to sport. So in that mindset, I talk about the, you know, the importance of having a positive attitude.
Well, why has the world shifted into such positive? Like, you know, back in when you could probably hear the coaches give a fearful spray at quarter time, three quarter time. But is it just the world has just gone so woke or soft, and now the young kids these days aren't yelled at or they get told fucking life's beautiful and like no winning or losing, so the kids can't handle it when they're coming up? Or it just seems like the world has just shifted so much, and no one can get yelled at anymore. You can't you're not allowed to know whether you've been shit at something or good at it all. Just, oh, bad luck, mate. Keep the next one. Like, is that?
I don't know.
Do you think that's a good thing? That, well, like, the world is so rosy and there's no, like.
I've struggled with that. I mean, the old-fashioned athlete in me says, you know, like, geez, we're soft on those blokes now, you know, because, you know, you used to get a, you know,
no skin folds,
the spray, like, no skin folds, you know, no, I can't do skin folds because that might embarrass somebody.
Exactly,
you know?
As a professional athlete, like.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's, you know, the psychologists and the mindset and the life coaches have all come along and say that barreling people doesn't work. You know, it's about reinforcement and positive type things as well. And I sort of get that, but sometimes you do need a kick.
I get that at local footy and, like, at school and that, but then as you're a professional athlete, I think you should be told.
So
it's about encouraging and being positive, I guess. And I see that the junior, my kids play junior footy, and I think the junior coaches are pretty good because even when we're 10 goals down at half time, you know, he's still encouraging them.
So they know the score, though, don't they?
They do. Yeah.
I'll give you the mathematical reason for this, right? Have you heard of Daniel Kahneman?
Yeah, go on. Help me.
So Daniel Kahneman, his great book is Thinking Fast and Slow, but Michael Lewis, who then is famous for Moneyball, but also wrote a fantastic book called The Undoing Project. It's about him and a guy called Amos Tversky, and he, even though they collaborated because Amos Tversky died, I don't think he can win a Nobel Peace Prize posthumously, so they just gave it to Daniel Kahneman, right? He did a study on Israeli pilots, and this is no different to professional athletes, that if they did something wrong, i.e. ones that didn't kill you in combat, but if you did something wrong, the tradition was to yell the shit out of them.
Right.
And then they'd do something better. And that's good because we yelled at them. So no different to a footy coach, the old style footy coach. Then the study was made and it was realised, no, it was just mean reversion. So these people are so talented that without, the bake actually did no good whatsoever.
Yeah.
But this is what you did wrong, this is how you can do better. Can actually bring people back to the mean quicker.
But instinctively, as an athlete, you know when you haven't done well.
That's right.
You
don't.
If you're talented enough to be playing AFL footy, or you're in the Olympics, or you're in the Australian hockey team, or the Boomers, you know, you don't need to be barreled. You know when you've stuffed up. I mean, that's part of your own motivation, your own pride, your own self-esteem. So, you know, you can be barreled out in front of your mates and be embarrassed, and sometimes that has a negative effect on people because they withdraw a little bit. But, you know, I think if you're an elite athlete, you don't need to be told that I didn't do well today, and or, you know, I didn't chase when I should have chased. You know, hopefully you don't need
Good
to
luck
be told.
Telling Mick Malthouse that.
Yeah, but, the, you know, the same with Tommy Hafey when he was, you know.
Ron Barassi. Bart Cummings is the second name I put for mindset, and it might also be part of your connection thing as well. And that's, I'm not name dropping Pete because, you know, we could name drop all day the people we've worked with.
You and I go for a while if we start that, mate.
And we do. But, no, I met Bart at 79. Through my job, and I had to. There's four of us at a time. I couldn't believe how positive he was, and he's talking about the future, and he's about to go to the sales in New Zealand, and that's when he got So You Think, his best ever horse. This is the greatest trainer of all time, right? But I thought, hang on, take away the famous bit and the greatness. This is a man at 79 thinking about the future, and he had a reason for being.
Yeah.
And that's the important part of the mindset, isn't it? A reason for being.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about the Japanese because they have a word called ikigai, and there's a book called ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I, and ikigai really translates into English as a reason to start your day.
Yep.
Something to look forward to. So the Japanese have this real positive, they get up and they're looking forward, that elderly people, to that, and it's called ikigai. And they have no word for retirement in the Japanese language. There's no translation for retirement. And there's, you know, and you wouldn't want to be in the nursing home business in Japan because the generations look after each other, right?
Yes.
And the idea. So this concept of having a reason to get up in the morning and to look forward to doing something, and that's this is where we saw, I think, during COVID, which is sort of the other reason I was thinking about this during the COVID time, is, you know, the social isolation that people have, where you couldn't get up and you couldn't get going. It really had a negative mindset on a lot of people, particularly people who were already
finish Netflix.
Yeah, well, there wasn't much else to do, mate.
Yeah, I know,
but it was mind-numbing a little bit, you know, especially people lived alone, and that was the thing. That
don't get us started on COVID.
Well, I'm not, but it was...
I will ask you this, though, about COVID, because this is... So the medical fraternity, you have your conspiracies of all that about the
still going.
Yeah, of course, about the vaccine.
Yep.
But that is... How did people get it so wrong that something so vital as exercise, outdoors... was considered something you shouldn't do. That just fucking blew my mind. And they would cross to so-called medical experts on the TV who would be 35 kilos overweight and they're experts. I'm thinking, fuck me, how can you be an expert on how to live your life? So from that point of view, I know you're very sensitive about the medical fraternity, but that area, they got wrong.
So I missed the point, though, because you were allowed to exercise.
No, but it was only an hour.
And only an hour.
Yeah, all those restrictions weren't saying, look, do your best out in the path.
Yeah.
But, you know, so in other words, if you wanted to go for a 4-hour bike ride, that should have been encouraged.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the COVID thing, look, I mean, I say to my kids, you look back in history and say, did we really get it so wrong? Because no one had a blueprint for that, right? There was no game plan they were working from. People had to make it up on the run because suddenly we had a global pandemic, not a flu, you know, influenza thing going through Australia. We had a global pandemic that had an incredible impact on the economy, had an impact on health, it had an impact on international relations. And nobody, and we look back and say, did we get it wrong? Well, maybe we did, but you know, we were the harshest treated city in the world, as you know, in terms of lockdown. And you know, and I had patients whose small businesses, their little coffee shops or their news agencies, they all shut down. You know, I went through more boxes of tissues. People come, I don't make people cry.
Well,
all
that. This is not that kind of podcast. Calm down.
Like, you can't watch those things on Netflix.
No, but I was going to make the point that that COVID was so harsh on you know, people would come in and they talk to me 2 minutes about their sore shoulder, and the rest they'd be in tears because they. You know, their business or
people probably making up injuries so they get out of the house.
Well, they could, people come in as look, I'm just you know, you're doing pretty well, don't you? I just want to come and see you. I'm allowed to go out of my house, I had an appointment to see you. So, but you know, we look back at you know, the immunity because I talk about in the book about immunity and I talk about COVID because exercise improves your immunity, you know, and again, that's the thing that we got people out doing. But in terms of the way that the federal government, the state government, and you know, because international health funds or health fund organisations look at us and go, Australia, gee, you're pretty tough on people. And did it make a difference? I don't know, because we're still, and we got a new wave coming every 12 months, like the flu. We got a new strains coming. At Epworth today, there are people cancelling their surgeries because you still get a COVID test when you come in and they test positive for COVID and they get sent home today.
Oh, mate, it's not in the news anymore, though, is it? Just
forgot. It was on the news yesterday because, I mean, look, I think we got COVID burnout. You know, the thing is, we got sick of hearing the numbers, you know, a bit sick of Dan's and his North Face, you know, every day. And so, but COVID still exists, right? It's just that, you know, we move on to other stories because people just got, as I said, the people got COVID fatigue, I call it.
The book is The Healthy 100. I know you've got to go. 100 Ways to a Healthier, Happier and Longer Life with Dr. Peter Larkins. Someone says, I need to start. What's your first thing you want us to tell them?
Oh, the first is to move. Movement is medicine, you know. So we talk about exercise as medicine. So if you're saying, look, I just need to do something, you know, you don't have to be training as an athlete. As I said, what you need to do is say, okay, I'm just going to start moving. I'm going to go for a walk. And as I said, even if you do 5 minutes, you're actually burning up some calories and you're starting the process. And so the whole concept of, you know, if you want to start looking after your health, you want some cardio, which is walking. Strength training is a bit harder because you need access to at least to some TheraBands.
You can still do push-ups.
You can use equipment in the house. Yeah, you can use the kitchen bench. You can use the edge of the sofa. You can get up and down out of a chair just to strengthen your quads and to do a wall sit. You know, there's stuff like that. There's plenty of apps. And if you go on Google, there's something to do. You don't have to belong to a health club, you know, to get strength training. But movement is the key one, right? So if you say, I'll just, you know, if I've got my kids, I will take your kids out for a walk. You know, I get my kids, get off the screen, come out and go for a walk. So just building up from that 5 to 10 minutes to 15 minutes, starting to do that. And then just look at the food, what you're eating. If you're eating out a lot, then you've got to say, am I eating too many desserts? Am I eating 3 courses when I can eat 2? Am I adding salt when I shouldn't be eating salt? You know, do I want the salad dressing on the side of the salad? You know, there's little tips like that. If you're a businessman, you've got to eat out quite a bit. So I think they're all in the book. It's, I mean, there's simple things. See, I say I haven't invented these messages. I'm just delivering them, I think, in a language that people understand. My own style comes through, hopefully, in that. You know, I'm not the guru on nutrition or the guru on exercise. People have done all this hard work. But I'm just trying to deliver it. You know, I talk about LRD, listener receptor deficit. People don't listen. They know they've got to exercise. They know you've got to lose weight.
Do you listen, Dane?
Pardon? LRD. It's a diagnosis I put in the book, Ralphie. LRD, listener receptor deficit. So start listening and hearing.
What about kids? I know, obviously, we're in the new age of internet and phones, and it's you know, I played footy. I played sport because there was no online porn and no internet to look at. You know what I mean? When you're a kid, but
is there online porn?
Yeah, well, you and your tissues. Yeah, I think you know exactly. but like getting the kids out, like how much of have you seen a deficit in? Like, is there child obesity? Is that bigger now? Because
it is. Yeah.
So how do the parents out there get the kids moving a little bit more? Because
you're talking to someone who's going, I've got a 13 and 16 year old boy, you know, boys, and it's a challenge for them because they play basketball and they do martial arts, but their amount of time on a screen is just blows my mind, you know, on that sort of thing. And so you've just got to try to have some guidelines. You've got to have some rules within the house about time frames and how much to do, because otherwise they just go in there and close the door. I've learnt that, and they're in the room, they come out to eat and go back in again, especially during school holidays.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, my attitude is I try to set the example. So they know I go out and exercise most days. They know I deliver. I've got some, you know, free weights and that they can start using, you know, the, next to the TV while they're watching the news tonight, just doing some dumbbell weights and just doing some simple curls and some simple squats and things.
Dad's off to work again, Dane.
Yeah. So the issue is really you've got to have some discipline to sit down and make them understand because, you know, we have got a problem of increasing weight and obesity amongst kids. You know, we're seeing it grow all the time. We're seeing less phys ed in the schools and we're seeing less people playing competitive sport. And again, part of the concussion things leading to that. And we don't want to, you know, be too, without going too much off track about concussion, we don't want to be too negative about saying, oh, you might get hurt playing sport because the downside of that is people don't play sport and they get fat and they spend more time on screens and we'll have a much bigger health crisis in the future if people aren't active. So getting kids out and just having some discipline and to make them go down to the local basketball ring and just throw it around for half an hour or just to walk around the block with the dog. You just got to get them out.
Great stuff, Doc. Appreciate you coming.
Thanks, Ralphie. Thanks, nice to catch up again.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.